This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9. I'm Chuang and with Noel Lim. Let's talk about the roadmap for economic recovery.
Malaysia is seeking to raise the statutory debt limit as the budget deficit is projected to swell following the outbreak of the Delta variant, and we need to put aside funds to fight this pandemic. So Finance Minister Tengku Zafrul Aziz had actually mentioned this. He would propose to the cabinet to increase the debt ceiling to 65% of GDP, above the statutory cap currently at 60%, before presenting all this to Parliament.
Putrajaya has also introduced 8 stimulus packages since the start of the pandemic, totaling 530 billion ringgit, inclusive of fiscal injections, direct fiscal injects of about 83 billion ringgit. And with the government lowering GDP growth estimates for the year 2021 to 3-4%, it may have no choice but to raise the ceiling. But some are arguing that raising the ceiling is irresponsible and will have long-term negative implications. To share this perspective, we speak now to Carmelo Felito, an economist from the Centre for Market Education. Carmelo, thanks for talking to us. Now, why is raising the debt ceiling in Malaysia from 60% to 65% a bad idea?
Hi, good morning. Beyond the number itself, I think that my critics lays in the fact that by borrowing more money, by giving more resources to the government to spend on the general economy, you may produce bad unintended consequences for the future. And in particular, I refer to the risk of higher inflation, a devaluated currency, getting less trust from foreign investors, and discouraging or offsetting private investments, and therefore creating less job opportunities that are durable in the long run.
Yeah, so I do agree with the point of view how we need to spend wisely. But just looking at the numbers, so GDP growth has slowed down thanks to the pandemic and all that lockdowns. So the debt to GDP ratio would automatically rise slightly. And wouldn't it make sense from a pragmatic and prudent point of view is to raise that debt ceiling so that we do have enough or some buffer to spend to fight the pandemic, and especially to prepare for any possibilities of a variant spread?
I think that over the past 18 months, we have done one fundamental mistake, that has been to adopt generalized measures for containing the pandemic that forced the government to adopt counter-generalized measures in terms of subsidies and intervention to help the people. I think that we should change this strategy, adopting a more targeted approach that means to spend less, but to spend better.
Now, how exactly will that be done, Carmelo? I mean, conceptually, it does make sense because obviously you want to spend as prudently as possible. But Malaysia does not have a track record of accurate accounting and accountability.
I think that probably no government in the world has a good track record in this sense. Precisely because what you are saying, we should focus more on freeing private resources, so unleashing a sound recovery from the private sector so that the government can focus only in spending in targeted sectors like strengthening the healthcare system, which I think is the only crucial investment that we should focus at the moment.
Well, we're on the cusp of Budget 2022, Carmelo. Without hoping to be too optimistic, what is the one thing Malaysia can do to free up the private sector? And what is the one thing Malaysia can do to invest more in healthcare?
I think that in order to unleash the forces from the private sectors, we need to launch signals. Expectations are the main driver for investment. So we should launch a clear signal that the government believes that the recovery needs to be based on private investment. And that's why I propose in a statement a couple of days ago, a little reduction in corporate tax. So to give the signal to the private sector that we believe that a sound recovery comes from there. This, I think, will be crucial. And by unleashing more investment, in the end, you create more job opportunities, you create growth, and this will automatically also generate more revenues for the government.
Yeah, so, you know, a cut in corporate tax doesn't guarantee that extra revenue, extra profit will go to salaries. In fact, it may just end up still with the owner's hands. And then also there's another point of view is that the profitable companies can take care of themselves and therefore they will pay taxes. But it's the unprofitable companies, they don't pay taxes anyway because they are making losses. So how can we help those companies?
You mean unprofitable companies? We need to help these companies to get back to profitability, of course. And the best way to do so is to give them a safe environment where to operate, an environment in which SOPs don't change every 2 days, in which there is a commitment to allow them to operate, but not only a commitment to operations. It has to be also a commitment to understanding the complexity of the economic system. And I give you a very simple example. If you allow all the supply chain of schools to operate, so the people producing the desks, and the tables and the chairs can operate, the people producing the food can operate, but then schools remain closed, there is no point for these companies to operate. So we need to redesign our strategy and commit to understanding of this complexity so that the economy can go back on track. But obviously, this will take time. This means a commitment to a long-term strategy because policies have consequences. So whatever we have done, good or bad, in the past 18 months, will have to be paid in terms of consequences.
Carmelo, the signals that you speak of from the government, and you refer specifically to corporation tax, how much stakeholder engagement have they interfaced with people like you? And to what extent is the possibility of such a thing happening?
So far I didn't see much engagement from the government apart from the involvement with certain chambers of commerce, but not much with think tanks, I have to say. But a different signal was sent by the current government, at least in terms of speeches, and we are waiting for these speeches to be converted into action. We hope to be engaged in a conversation, and we hope that the government can understand that a fiscal reform is part of the recovery path, even if can be only partially popular and can produce effects only in the long run. I'm not sure if we will see this with the current government, but I tend to be optimistic and I hope so.
Still on fiscal measures, you're proposing a targeted and multi-layer reintroduction of GST. Where would you start introducing this, considering economic activities are so linked?
Yes, I think that we should, like it is done in other parts of the world, think to have a lower percentage for the GST for essential goods, for primary goods, I'd say like food, and then increasing this percentage as far as we move more into luxury goods. I think that the way in which it was implemented a few years ago, it was already quite good. We just need to work around that model. I think also that there is a general consensus of the need of GST among fiscal experts, among businesses, and many people realize that abandoning that tax was a mistake. So let's sit together and design a better tax that can produce good results for the country.
Well, again, conceptually, that seems a good idea, Carmelo, but the current government, with its bare majority, might be loath to reintroduce GST because it's very unpopular. It was the camel that broke the straw's back in those days.
For one side, I think that many already realized that what replaced GST, namely SST, was even worse than the GST. Secondly, the government has try to get the opposition involved, try to launch signals of discussions and distension with the opposition. I hope that facts will follow on this and that the opposition will be able to support a reasonable tax reform for the common good.
Okay, Carmelo, thank you so much for your time. That was Carmelo Felitto from the Center for Market Education. Now, that's going to be interesting, isn't it? Because that really would really move the needle, the reintroduction of GST. As we know, in those days, we had 6% GST. But, you know, a lot of countries around the world, I think like maybe 100 countries around the world have GST, including in Singapore. And the prudent way for them to introduce GST in those days was at a very low quantum. I think Singapore introduced at 3%. It took a number of years before they went up to 5 or 6%.
Yeah, GST is seen to be the more progressive, a better tax system, right? And more comprehensive. But I can't see them, the government, having the appetite to bring this back again at this point in time.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.